So hello everyone, my name is Dimitra Rentuka. I'm very glad to see your faces here today. I am a data warehouse architect for the region of Uppsala. We used to be called City Council of Uppsala, but then we became bigger and we got even more information. So I'm the data warehouse architect for the team that is helping people take decisions in the region of Uppsala. What you need to know about me is that I love data. I've always loved data. I've studied data. I have a master's in data. I work with data. That's what I do. And to my surprise, and to many people's surprise, then the data started coming some years ago. A lot of data started coming. So zettabytes of data, petabytes of data. Some new measurement that I think it's called yottabytes of data. This has also started coming. So the problem is not anymore the lack of data in order to be able to take decisions, but it's rather how to derive intelligence from data. So any business, any company that has even the basic business intelligence initiative, not even a department, but initiative, they are working with reporting, right? So what they can give an answer to is what we call descriptive intelligence. So it's the what questions. What was my sales in July 2016? This is a what question that can be answered by simple reporting. If you move to the next stage of maturity of BI, then you find the diagnostic level. On the diagnostic level, we are working with what we call interactive dashboards. So in these dashboards, we are even able to give an answer to the why. Why did something happen? So if I have a lot of sales in December and I sell sweets and candy and I drag in my dashboard the season attribute, I will see it's Christmas. If we move to the next stage of intelligence maturity, we will find prediction. What will my sales be in the future? Can I cover my demand? And that we do with the help of machine learning. And the final stage of intelligence, where we have reached actually to be able to take in decisions and moving into actions based on data and not on somebody's gut feeling or the guy who has a lot of experience, but on data, it's the prescriptive business intelligence. And that will give us the answer to what should I do? What should I produce? What is selling the most? When should I have predictive maintenance, for instance, on my machines? These are more complicated questions. And to answer to those questions, you need some type of recommender and some type of automation. So in 2015, in the Professional Association for SQL Server Summit, the PASS Summit, as it is called, it's the largest summit for data. In the PASS Summit, anyway, the vice president of Microsoft, Joseph Shirosh, said that we live in the age of data. And throughout the years, what has driven the evolution in technology is the user experience. So it started in the 60s, for instance, at what people wanted to have was more automation in hardware. So they wanted to have faster cars, or they wanted to have better communication, or they wanted to have simply washing machines. And then when the internet came in 1989, then they wanted to have digitization. They didn't want to write mails anymore. They wanted to write emails, and they were using software. And now, when we are in the age of data, then we're not any longer talking about products or tools. We're not talking about Office 365 as a tool. We're talking as Office 365 productivity. We're talking as collaboration. We're working with ideas. What we're trying to create is a technology that is driven by intelligence. Of course, business intelligence would follow this wave of technology. It is not around the same years, not around the same year decades, because people started focusing on business intelligence a lot later than they had automation or than they had internet. But it also has its own stages, and they are also driven by the customer experience, by how people produce and consume data. So on the first wave of intelligence, we have the technical BI. And the technical BI back in 1996, when I wasn't working, but I was working in 2000-something, and it was exactly the same, it was that developers would develop the whole system from source to reporting and deliver a static report to the user. So I'm very used to just putting things in Excel, putting them out on a PDF or on a PowerPoint, and sending it over to a CEO around the globe. What changed in the mindset from 2008 was that we took in the analyst. The analyst could also come in and share the whole model. They could understand the whole model. So it wasn't anymore only the technical people. But what we did was that we run Power Queries in Excel. People are used to working with Excel. Why not? Run Power Queries in Excel, that it is some type of integration for the data to get in the data, and then build the Power Pivots. Remember the Power Pivots? Or you could produce a cube, and then the users could analyze the cube with pivoting it. And then you could see everything in Power View, or make a map of it in Power Map. So Power to the User came there in 2008. And the democratization continues, because this is what it is. It's intelligence for everyone. And there you see the technical person, and you see the analyst, and you see somebody who is just checking on reports. And most of the people focus on the reporting part. Oh, Power BI is visualization. But I want us actually to see that it is not only about the reporting. This is not how we democratize data, but it's also how democratized systems look, even for developers. Have you thought about all the drag and drop functions? That it's a lot easier to build models, that you can build a model in Power BI. You can even write R and do predictions. So with the same mindset, the Azure end-to-end solution for analytics was built. And that looks something like that. Well, that's not the whole picture, is it? But I have to see it the way I see it as an architect. I need first to see my sources. What would be my data sources? Well, that could be anything. It could be a CSV file. It could be an Excel file. It could be another database, for instance. Or it could be an application, a CRM system or an ERP system. And it could even be sensors and devices. What do you mean by that? Yeah, it can be those systems that are measuring, for instance, temperature or humidity, if you want to be able to control how often your plant is going to be watered. Or it could be logs, for instance. Okay, what do I do as an architect? I have to take in the data, right? Information management. In my head, I have it as integration services. Somehow, I need to extract, to transport, and to load the data into a storage. That's how we do. How do we do that on the cloud? We're using Azure Data Factory. Azure Data Factory builds pipelines, and those pipelines you can schedule. You're having a source and a destination. So it's the same type of thinking as it is in the usual integration services. It looks something like that. It is very, very easy to create, as is all Azure services. It's really drag and drop. You go, you give a name to what you want it to be called. You give an account that you want to connect it to. And then you say, okay, what's my pricing? And that, I think, it's clever. It's actually genius because I'm not allowed to be using cloud where I work, but I do this at home. And I don't want to be paying a lot of stuff. And I'm not going to go recommend something that I haven't tested as an architect. So I always start with basic. Basic can be up to maybe $5 per month, something like that. So I always start there. I always start with a basic. Does it work for me? Do I want to scale up? We're going to look at another pricing plan. But for now, this is as easy as it gets, really, to be able to test and to see if that works for you. Now, data catalog, on the other hand, data catalog is used to store metadata, and it's also used for people to be able to trace their sources. Now, that I haven't tested because it needs a school or a work account, and I don't work with that, so I can't tell you more about that, unfortunately. But what I know is that it's used for metadata. Event Hub is your integrator for what we call sensors and devices. So it's an integrator to be able to take those signals in. Okay, we've done our ETL process, our extract, transform, load process. Where do we put the data? We need a storage, right? Big data stores. SQL data warehouse, nothing weird there. It's a data warehouse. A lot easier to set up, a lot easier to scale up or scale down, of course. And then we have the data lake store, that it is actually a Hadoop distributed system file that can store any type of data, structured, unstructured, lots of data. So what you could do is that you could go from sensor end devices to Event Hub to a data lake store. My favorite part, machine learning and analytics. So I have my data stored, yeah? Let's say I have this on the SQL data warehouse. Where do I ask the questions? Where do I move to these stages of intelligence that we described before? What will happen? What should I do? There is your guy, machine learning. Easy. Drag and drop, as all of the whole sequence end-to-end solution is drag and drop. And then, on top of it, you don't need to be a data scientist. You don't need to, because there is a lot of resources, there is a lot of material for you to read so that you can build your own experiments. And again, it's easy to just create your own workspace, create your own experiments, see if that works for you. If it doesn't work, don't operationalize it. Then we have the data lake analytics that is actually a preview for being able to do analysis on the data lake store data. So it's on a preview right now. You can go ahead and try it. Then we have stream analytics for real-time streaming. And we also have the HD insight, which actually is more of a storage. So at the beginning, I didn't see why do people have it on analysis. But what I understood was that you can put things on it, like you can have Storm on it, and then you are having Stream Analytics there as well. Or you can have Spark. And with Spark, then you can run all these type of different queries on your data. So that is the reason that HD Insight is rather on the analytics part than it is on the big data stores part. Very important. Was always your problem that you couldn't go to the cloud because we have cubes and they don't have cubes? They announced that analysis services is on the cloud. That happened in the Professional Association for SQL Server Summit this year. So in the past summit this year, 2 weeks ago, it was announced that analysis services is on the cloud. That refers only to the tabular model. So those of you who have still multidimensional models won't be able to move to the cloud. But they will see if the demand is as big for the multidimensional models, then they will release a version of analysis services on the cloud for multidimensional models as well. So we're moving to the last part, the most important, the one that shows, the one that's shiny. And first, we'll talk about Power BI, which you probably all know. It's been so many sessions about Power BI. That is a very rich visualizations, interactive visualizations tool, and that you can also use it to build your models on the back end in the designer, in the desktop. And then you can publish your reports and you can share them and you can run like small questions that are up, give me maximum of this. And it's very pretty and it's very nice. And I don't feel I have to say more about Power BI because it's already very, very much on the focus. If we look at the other parts of intelligence, what do we have there? Cognitive services. So cognitive services are application programming interfaces, APIs, which you can integrate into your own apps if you're interested in having different types of recognition. If you've been following these research projects that Microsoft has been having, these were known as Project Oxford before. So they were doing these vision algorithms where you could identify like objects, and they were doing face recognition, which was very, very popular and very, very successful. And they were doing also search, like Bing, this type of searching. And they were having like knowledge and, of course, language, like Skype Translator or any type of language projects, really. So you may have also tried these funny apps that are out there that is called, for instance, howold.net, and you upload your picture and it says how old you look in this picture, and it does that with face recognition. Or you maybe have tried the mymustache.net that shows like how well has your mustache grown. So the first level is lame mustache. It's not good at all. And then there is another one that is called, I think, what dog? And apparently I'm a poodle. Yeah. So that is the cognitive services. Then there is a lot of focus in bot framework. And I read this morning on Twitter that Microsoft is going to cooperate with something that is called OpenAI in order to be able to develop even more bots for developers to be able to develop their own bots. So it's kind of really an open artificial intelligence. Give this to the developers. So as I said before, the democratization is not only for the end user, it's not only for those who look at your reports, but it's also for the developer, that it should be easy to implement your ideas. Do you have a good idea about what the customer needs to see? You don't need to go and program and do all these things. You need to drag and drop. And the technology behind it is handled by such cooperations as Microsoft and OpenAI. So if you go and look at their bots website, then you can just pick which bot you want to have. What's a bot? What are you talking about? Yeah, bot is like a robot, like a machine that is speaking with you on a very specific matter. So it can work as a customer service bot. There is one that is reading your tarots or that can play games with you and stuff like that. And then you have the ultimate assistant. Cortana herself. So I don't personally use Cortana, but I know Cortana helps with anything from like sending texts for you and messages, and also that she can schedule things for you, handling your calendar. She can find things for you like facts, like maps, like info. So, or she can chit-chat with you and play games with you. So I know people who can't live without Cortana. So I think she's dangerous. So, yeah, at the end there, You have your people, yeah? You have your consumers. Who's going to take that? Automated systems. Oh, I took the decision that you need to lower the temperature if this and this and this happens. Automation. Somebody needs to automate that. It's not going to happen by itself. Apps on the web, on mobile, or bots, and then the people that are consumers of reporting or of any of these services. What do all of the last things have in common are deliverables. Machine learning. Not the machine learning component, the machine learning thinking. What will happen? What should I do? They all have machine learning. And why do I want to focus so much on machine learning? What's with me and machine learning? Well, I mean, machine learning is not new. It's been around forever. Okay, not forever, but since the 50s at least. In a way or another, not as in a complete system that runs by itself. But why do I want to focus there? For one, because us in business intelligence want to have more mature systems. We want to move away from the what and the why. And most of us are on the what, I promise you, not even on the why. But we want to move to the what will happen and what should I do. And this is how we're going to do it. And the thing is, we're not the only ones that have now seen that. Oh, okay, well, machine learning would be good. But it's also the whole world. It was actually Satya Nadella that said in the Ignite conference in September on his keynote about the future of technology that AI is the future of technology. And how did he see it? What did he think? He's thinking his consumers. You remember what we talked about? The consumer experience, the customer experience. What he sees is that people want to have sticky notes where you write something and it translates it automatically to a schedule or to a flight and puts it on your schedule. So he wants to create a technology with the help of machine learning and artificial intelligence that is going to be for us a seamless factor, something invisible that is just helping us to realize our ideas. That nothing stands between us and productivity. So that's how Microsoft is seeing it, and that's why they have these cognitive services, and that's why they have the bots, and that's why they are focusing so much on collaboration and digitalization and productivity. What did we say? Concepts, not tools, right? So the thing is, you can use this thing in so many different sectors. You can use machine learning to be able, for instance, to give better care in people who need it. So Optolexia, that is a Swedish program, can trace the eye movement when kids are reading a text. So it gives you the risk of the kids having ADHD, for instance. Oh, sorry, dyslexia. So it can give a better treatment to that. In my field, in the Uppsala region, we're handling a lot of medical data. I see things that I could use this type of prediction, this type of prescriptive intelligence so much. So it could be, for instance, bed availability. Sounds trivial, doesn't it? It's like, yeah, we can solve that. No, but we don't. And there is not available beds. It's a problem. It's not as cool. It's not as fun as sticky notes being able to read my handwriting. But it's a lot more important, according to me. So, can machine learning solve everything? I buy it. Take it in. Isn't that how we think? I was having a, before I started working for the region of Uppsala, I was actually working for a very big consultancy company, and cloud was its middle name. Not literally, but really. We were doing cloud all the time. So we were having this digitalization, productivity, customer story, journey to the cloud. I was very, very much familiar with all this. And then the customer heard about machine learning, not the extra version you got now, but kind of like you can do anything with machine learning. And they were like, yeah, I'm going to do that. I want to do machine learning. But actually, it's not technology for technology. You have to have a question. It's not a magic box. I can assure you, I'm going to show how it looks. It's not a magic box. I was in a meeting where lots of people from the customer side were like, yeah, and it's going to do this, and it's going to do that, and the trucks are going to be arriving on time, and then we're going to be doing another thing. And it's like, okay, you've said like 5 questions that can be answered by machine learning and 10 different automations in order to be doing that, but we need to start from somewhere. You have to have a questions. Fine, okay, Dimitar, we get it. You have to have a question. What type of question can I have? Let's say a 2-class classification question. What is that? Let's say yes or a no. Will my sales go up? Yes or no. Will the customer buy this product? Yes or no. A multiple classification problem. Is this a cat, a dog, or a cow? Is this Twitter angry, emotional, sad, or happy? The other type of questions which you can have and which are in the field of what we call supervised learning are regression questions. The regression questions are answering to the how many, how much. How much time will it take me for arriving from point A to point B if the traffic is like that and the weather is like that? The regression problems can also become classification problems solved with a regression method. What does that even mean? Yes or a no, with a chance or a risk of what percent? So now you have a classification problem with a regression method used to solve it. What does supervised learning even mean? It means I have labels. I have the answer. I have the answer, and I'm feeding it into the machine until it learns to predict when it only gets the factors that affect the answer. So that's a typical regression question, right? What you have on the left, that is the answer that is affected from factors of the right of the equation. So when I have the labels, I can train the system according to a model and I can score it, I can test it, I can do predictions and see how well this model performed. That's the supervised learning. In an unsupervised environment, I am just giving in tests of data, and then the machine, according to some algorithm that is defining distance between the points that I have sent in, can make clusters. Now, what is this distance thing? It can be different factors. It can be geographical points, as it would be in an image. Where is this pixel in accordance to this pixel? So this is part of a vein, and this is part of the background, for instance. So there is it is clustering according to similarity. There is also other algorithms that are called, for instance, recommenders. There is algorithms that are for anomaly detection, where you are seeing outliers. Anomaly detection is on the supervised learning. And why do I have regression on a very small bit under unsupervised learning? Well, it's because it's a dispute, really. Most of the people say, well, no, it's supervised learning. Some other people say, well, but you're using regression in unsupervised environments. And I don't know. I haven't studied that. So. Not all the algorithms, at least. So, But anyway, as I said before, you don't have to be a data scientist. Beautiful cheat sheet with all the algorithms, what you need to use in each case. Do you have a classification or regression? You look what you're going to use there. Do you have an unsupervised learning environment and data? You use other algorithms. There is something else that is called reinforcement learning, and that's absolutely amazing. And it's having both algorithms for supervised and unsupervised. So it's using pattern recognition from the unsupervised algorithms, and it's using classification methods from the supervised. But what it can do, and that is different to any other algorithm, is that it can take action. So it does not only answer to what will happen and what should I do, but it actually does it. We don't have this type of algorithms, not in Azure ML anyway. So when I am at conferences, I don't appreciate when people go to demo and they say, and then you drag and drop and you do it, when I don't know what are they trying to do? What is it you were trying to do? So therefore, I'm going to explain here what is it I'm going to show you so that you understand the steps. I'm going to go and train a system, a model, and score it in the Azure Machine Learning component. And that can only be done for supervised learning, because you can't score a system for unsupervised, right? It's making its own stuff. It's not learning from labels. So first things first, you have your question. Then you decide what data will I send in the system? What is relevant data? What you can do then is some data transformation. Take away the null values, pick specific columns. Maybe I don't need everything from these columns. Maybe not everything affects the result. Then what you go and do is split. What do you split? Usually, you split like a 70 to 30. 70% of your rows that you're sending in to train your model, to teach it how to identify this label, if it should be a yes or a no, if it should be a cat or a dog or a cow. And what you use the rest of your 30% is to score, is to test. You run then these predictions, and then you evaluate your algorithm. How are you going to do that? Well, you see what really happened and you see what was predicted. So then you know how good your algorithm was. How would we call that in the machine learning space? We would call it true positives. It was a yes and it was predicted as a yes. You would call it true negatives. It was a no and was predicted as a no. You would call it false positives. It was falsely predicted as a yes. You would call it false negatives. It was falsely predicted as a no. So this is how you evaluate. And this is what you're looking on the evaluation, which I'm going to show right now. So I have logged in. Look nice, didn't it? What did we say? First step, import the data. You forgot to ask me, people. What was your question? Didn't we say we have to have a question? What was my question? My question is if the patient is going to be readmitted within 30 days of being in the hospital or not. That would be amazing in the hands of doctors, if I may say. Can you think about it? Having a dashboard, alarm, 56 people predicted to be readmitted within 30 days. First of all, I need to see, do I have any beds? Or first of all, I need to see, can I do anything to prevent the readmission? So, I've taken my data from a public registry, so you're not seeing any personal information here, of course. What does my data look like? That's why I'm showing this. Encounter ID, doesn't matter. The patient number, that will actually matter. I'll explain why. Race, gender, age. And then I have done transformations before I send the data up to machine learning because it's easier, basically. So I've categorized to old, adult, and young. So I'm using this as an attribute instead. If it was an emergency or elective or urgent, where did these people get discharged from? Where were they admitted, the emergency room? Which was the medical specialty that they went to look at? And then it's also lab procedures, other procedures. I'm looking at my data. No, I'm not going to be taking everything. I'm not going to be taking everything. But since I'm looking at diabetics patients, I might want to take the insulin with, right? So that's what my data looks like. And what's my label? What am I going to train it to understand, to be able to predict? Readmission result, yes or no? How did you get that? Well, it was in the database. They were writing there, this person has been readmitted more than 30 days, less than 30 days. So all the less than 30 days became a yes, or the more than 30 days became a no. So I had this information. Great. What do we do here? Transform the data. What did we say before? Clean the values. Yeah? So I'm cleaning the missing data. Do I need to take every column? Does every column count in readmitting the patients? Probably not. I'm taking a chance. It doesn't mean it's a good model. You can go and change these things. You have to experiment. Okay, so what did you take? What columns did you take? Well, I took the race, I took the gender. What was the admission type? If it was emergency, elective, it was urgent. If they got discharged, where? Payer code, probably irrelevant, probably didn't need to take that. Insulin, important. Is it a diabetic patient? Yeah, that I want to have. And of course, my label, what it needs to learn from. So what it will basically do is it will see how the columns that I've chosen here affect the result readmission. So when I later on go in and give only these columns, it can predict the readmission result. Then we split the data. You remember what we said? 70-30. You can use another one. It's just what you usually would use. But it can be different, depending on your data, really. So I use 70% of the data to train my model, train the model. You see, one goes from split data to training my model and my algorithm, a two-class boosted decision tree. And my other arrow is going from splitting the data to scoring, and it comes also from the trained model data. So I'm scoring my model, and I'm interested to see. No, I want to tell you one other thing, by the way. Because I went and complained, actually, to Microsoft, and I said, but you know what? Data mining, actually, the one that was in, 2000, SQL Server 2000, it was on analysis services, and they had a data mining, and it's basically the same algorithms that they are here. And I said, well, you could see the decision tree. You could see how it decided, like, is this person Caucasian? Yes, no. Is this person over 50? Yes, no. Like, you could see how it was deciding. And you can't do it here. And then 2 weeks later, that is today, I completely regret that I said it because they fixed that. They have actually, if you go to the train model and you visualize it, you can see the tree. So that was unfortunate. I complained for no reason. But anyway, you know it as well now that if you go to the train model and you look on visualize, then you're going to be seeing your tree. It looks something like that. What does that say? Wait, so? Yeah, what does that 0.5 say? It's like, is it, if you get a chance more than 0.5, then it's a yes. If it's less than 0.5 chance, then it's a no. So this is what this is saying. Right, and I want to go and score my model. I score it with my 30% of test data and my trained model data. Visualize it? Yeah. So, readmission result? No. Predicted result? Scored label? No. What was the risk? What was the chance? You see, it's under 0.5 because the ones that would have over 0.5 would be scored as a yes. So, you see here how many yeses I had, how many no's I had? Very little yes. That's good, I guess, though. And then, I mean, you could even see already from your score model how your actual labels were marked and how your scored labels were predicted. So you could make an evaluation, a quick evaluation of your algorithm and see it doesn't perform that well. There is actually some yeses that are predicted as no's, and that's actually really risky. But you could also check out the evaluation. And it doesn't look that good. Something that would look good would be up to one, so I've predicted all the true positives as positives, and like this, I've predicted all the false negatives as negatives, false positives as false positives. So, true negatives. So it doesn't look good. It doesn't really look good, but that's not the point. Because you're going to try it again, and you're going to change the factors, and you can change what the data you used. You can change the columns that you used. Maybe something that you used didn't affect the result as much as you thought. So you play around with it. And then another thing which you can do is that you can evaluate different algorithms so you can see which one performs better. So, great. Yeah, that's good. What do I do with that? Well, you could run it in a different experiment. You can put it as an output on the as a web service. So you would give in these columns and it would give you a prediction. But what I usually do is that I send this result into a table because then I can call it from any reporting interface and it can basically show me which patients will come back for readmission within 30 days. Yeah, that's great, Mitra. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's great. I thought you would talk about people who can't go to the cloud. What was that? Am I supposed to lift everything to the cloud and then use machine learning? It's like, okay. Now some people will raise the eyebrow when I say I can't go to the cloud. But I can't go to the cloud, I promise. When I went to the region of Uppsala, I actually met with the person who is responsible for the technology strategy in the whole region of Uppsala. And I said to her, why not cloud? You know, I got with all these ideas and machine learning and we can have it in Asia and it's so cheap and you can scale up and you can scale down and all this stuff. And she said, take it back. We're not talking cloud in here, but I say Office 365. We have Office 365, that's cloud. She says, is it? But it's not the same thing. It is really not the same thing. Because I'm thinking it's a massive change transformation. It's a massive decision to take. Go and say to anybody who doesn't know about the cloud, your personal number will be on the cloud, along with whatever diseases or operations you've been having all these years. No, thank you. So I do understand that when you have confidential data, it's a massive decision to go to the cloud. Not everything can be put to the cloud, at least not in that speed. It should be decided by the transformation of the business. What you're going to use, if you're going to do it on-prem or if you're going to do it on the cloud, it should be decided by the transformation of the business. So, yeah, that's where I'm supposed to be. The thing is, I believe that Microsoft noticed that as well, because it wasn't only region of Uppsala. And quite frankly, it's not only Sweden either. On the summit that I was for 2 weeks ago, it was people from Europe and from the US, and they were, can Microsoft ever say it's completely safe? Put it all up there. Can you guarantee that? Because I have no way to make people to move to the cloud otherwise. And he was also working at the state, so he was also handling personal numbers and so on. But I think, as I said, that Microsoft also noticed that, because whatever work they had done on the cloud all these past years, they took down on-premise. So SQL Server 2016, for instance, it's a software that has first been tested on the cloud. So all the services have first been tested on the cloud. So cloud first was actually for us all. Great. So then I want to have an end-to-end solution on premises. How do I do that? Well, integration services, as we all know, very nice. They've gotten also a connection manager towards CRM and AX, which I didn't know about. I saw it on the conference 2 weeks ago. Sounds great. I have taken their SQL Server 2016 because I want to talk about Polybase and I want to talk about our services. Also, what you can have there would be actually the parallel data warehouse, which is kind of a hybrid, because they have a Hadoop part where you can have big data. But hold on, you said you can't go big data. You said you can't go on the cloud. But what you can do is that you can load from the SQL Server 2016, with the help of Polybase, you can create blobs, binary large objects. And these blobs, yeah, it could be audio files, it could be text files, it could be something that doesn't really matter, because you have to have a structure in it if you want to read it out and it's going to make sense. But what you could do is that you can send up on those aggregated data. Or you could have on those archives. And what you can do is that with help of Polybase, if you were to use, for example, the parallel data warehouse, you can use an SQL to query from both your on-premise data and your cloud data. But let's stick to the completely on-premise. Machine learning and analytics. Now, Dimitri, you're trying to cheat here. I know there is data mining, and data mining was almost the same as machine learning. So why are you trying to make me use R? Well, I'll tell you what. I looked, actually, what's the difference between data mining and machine learning? And most of people said, well, they are the same things because they use the same type of algorithms. But on the other hand, they are not used for the same purpose. Machine learning is more of engineering. It's trying to build a model. It's trying to make you a prediction model that you're going to operationalize and that you're going to be using. Data mining is on your cubes. First of all, you have to have cubes. It's on the analysis services. And then it's also that it's looking for relationships, for patterns in the database. Yeah, it's using the same algorithms, but they are used for slightly different reasons. So what I thought is, first of all, in the region of Uppsala, we don't have cubes. We have a visualization tool that is actually from another company and that is doing like in-memory analytics. So we put up everything on detail and it aggregates it automatically. So we don't have any cubes. And I want to do prediction. I need to move to the what will happen and what should I do. So how will I do that? R. Right, we didn't talk about the... You've realized I'm more of a back-end person. Reporting services and data and very nice mobile reporting with data Zen, and you have like the desktop where you build the reports and you publish, and then they look very nice on mobile, and reporting services looks a lot better than it did before. So why R? So R has been used since maybe 2000s, and it's a statistical analysis tool, and it is used by many, many, many people. More than 2 million people, I think. Why is it used by so many people? It's open source. You don't have to pay for it. And it also has very nice visualizations. So you can do visualizations in R. Also, one very important thing. People are contributing all the time in R. So there is libraries, there is algorithms, there is things for everything. So quite honestly, if you want to cheat a bit, you can find all the algorithms there. You don't even have to be a very skilled programmer. I'm not a very skilled programmer. Then finally, because Microsoft has acquired Revolution R and they've named it to Microsoft R, so now it's a part of SQL Server 2016 R services. And how did I do it? Install it. R services, I took the in-memory. I wanted it as close to the data. I wanted it to go fast. I wanted to do the same thing as I did with Azure ML. It can be a bit hard if you haven't read the instructions, but you need to run after installation scripts, and you need to start the launchpad again, and you need to start the configuration management, the service again, and so on and so on. Great. How am I going to debug it? How do I know if the code runs? You either download RTools on Visual Studio. They have RTools. It's new. Or you can use RStudio if you were using RStudio before. It's all open source. It's all free. Not summing it up. I'm going to show you how it looks. So here I am. Hello, SQL Server 2016. This is the script that you're running after your installation. And you get a bonus script to see if it's really installed and running. So this is R's Hello World. And I'm going to do something that is called the readmission model. As we did before in the machine learning component, I want you to see those steps again. It's not crazy code that is doing whatever. It's very, very structured. So it's a stored procedure, yeah? First of all, I'm reading my data. You see, it's just select. Select distinct, same columns as I took in the machine learning component from the table. So I've created this table. It's ready data. And then I have the result sets, race, gender, and so on and so on. What do I do next? I'm creating an input set, the readmission data. Right. The interesting part, I need a library. I need a model somewhere. Ready library, E1071. You can find tons of them. So this time I'm going to use the Naive Bayes. I actually think I'm going to run those. creating the table. Oh, I only have 5 minutes and so much to say to you. All right, create the table. Great. Let's drain it. We're creating the procedure that is going to be training the model. So that's what we do here. So let's gonna go make this model. I'm running the procedure that is used. Okay. So. Yay. This is my prediction. So I built the model. Now I'm scoring the model. I trained it and I'm scoring it. See, readmission result, readmission predicted. Bad model. That's a really bad model. But you know what this is? It's the same thing we did on the machine learning component. And I did it completely on premise. So I'm going to sum up because I don't have much time. I didn't think I could speak so much. Yeah, get carried away. I do. So summing it up. We need to go to the next maturity levels. This is what our customers want. This is what our developers want. We all want to go to the what will happen, what should I do? Does it matter that I can go to the cloud or not? It shouldn't. It shouldn't matter. Massive focus, machine learning, artificial intelligence, not only for us, for everyone, really. So it's just to see how we can benefit from it. If all eyes are looking there, look also there. Maybe it's something for you too. Not for technology though. Not like that one, oh, machine learning, let's buy it. You can use Azure ML on the cloud, or you can use R on SQL Server 2016. And we also talked about the whole sequence end-to-end solution. That's also good thinking to have when you're building a BI solution, take it end to end. I have some useful links that you can look at, which I thought were interesting, like the Azure Data Factory, and for the Polybase, what I described about, where you can put your archive data, or where you could put your aggregated data, for instance. Yeah, and she's really good, Ginger, the one that is owning the Desertis SQL, or whatever it's called, her blog. She's really good. She's taking it step to step, just like I like it. What you're trying to accomplish, this is how you do it. Analysis services on the cloud. Some of you maybe had the opposite problem. Maybe wanted to go to the cloud, but couldn't because you couldn't have analysis services. And then some links for learning R and the R general links. I have 2 minutes to speak about dreams. So last year, I don't know if you were on my last year's presentation, but I talked about my dream, which is the digital patient. So what I was dreaming about last year, before I started working with medical data, was number one, to work with medical data. And number two, it was to have a holistic picture of your patient. So I wanted to have in as much data as possible. Signals from your insulin and pictures from your, I don't know, from your veins. And to have like history, everything. I wanted to have a holistic picture of the data, as much data as possible. Now when I've started to work with medical data, I realize that, what did we say at the beginning? It's not the lack of data. It's deriving intelligence from the data. So what I would like to see, what I'm dreaming about, is intelligent healthcare. And intelligent healthcare is a holistic view on the patient, but that also includes these recommenders, these predictions. Then the what will happen and what should I do? So for instance, suggested actions. Treat the patient as a customer, as your most valuable customer, what should they do next? What other people who had the same symptoms do? How does a drug affect most of people? Can you imagine how would that work for doctors, for medical personnel? How much could we do prevention instead of firefighting? So that is my vision. But what you can take here from today is, how does that apply to your business? How does that apply to your customers, to your life? Whose hero are you going to be with your intelligence? So thank you very much for attending. I'll be hanging out with my colleagues from my previous company at Avanade if you want to ask questions. I think maybe I should leave the room for the next speaker to come. So...